Welcome to Cronecast. Your hosts, Trudy Callahan and Lisa Austin, are here to encourage you to embrace your inner crone and revel in your wisdom, experience, and intuition. The podcast about women of a certain age for women of any age. This is Cronecast. Good day, everyone out there. You're here with Trudy Callahan and Lisa Austin, podcasting from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Hello, Trudy. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. I'm ready to chat. I've had a stressful week, but I feel like I'm ready to chat with you.
Excellent. Well, let's, without further ado, let's get into it.
Okay.
So last time, in our last podcast, we talked about intuition a lot.
We did.
And we talked for quite a while, and we decided that it was probably a good idea to have another podcast about, you know, how we acquire and hone intuition and sort of that idea of it being something that can be improved upon, it can be developed, it can evolve. And so I'm curious today about, because you intimated this in when we talked last time, about how your intuition developed over time, especially since you didn't feel like you had strong intuition as a younger woman.
That's right. Although having had a few days to think about that, I've honed my thinking further, although I still don't have necessarily a good answer, but I have maybe a better answer than last time. I think probably I'm having trouble discerning the difference between being able to do something and recognizing that you have that, you could do that, and or the development of that. So, you know, was I always intuitive? Apparently, according to my personality type, I am, but I'm not sure I either recognized the ability at the time or had yet to develop it. So that's the part I'm not really sure of yet.
And do you attribute that that maybe lack of recognition of intuition, do you attribute that to youth or to something else?
For me, I would say it definitely was youth. But it's also that trusting of one's inner voice that I hadn't yet learned to trust that. So as I got older and had some experiences where I had the feeling of intuition, it's a visceral thing for me of listening. We talked about, you know, it's kind of in your gut or in your body. For me, it was kind of under my skin. I have a feeling under my skin, and I don't have words right now to describe that. But I did have an experience that we talked about before where I had met someone, felt repulsed. The word, that's pretty strong, but I had a like super uncomfortable feeling meeting that person in a professional setting. And that person did end up to be someone who caused a great deal of havoc, who was not who he said he was not able to do the things he declared he could do. And in a very, a position of trust. It wasn't criminal or anything, but it certainly caused a great deal of trouble for a lot of people. I knew that without even knowing him, I knew there was something wrong, that I was hearing my body say something. And when I went through that experience, which probably took 2 years to all play out. This wasn't a week or two. This was 2 years of experience. And then thinking, oh, I see that thing you feel, you need to listen to that. You're right. I'm so much better at it now.
Well, that brings me to an idea that I had over the last few days. And that is the idea that one of the things that hones intuition is repetition. So let me say more about that. So if we've not had a lot of experiences, I think it's very easy to sort of poo-poo our intuition or what our gut's telling us. Oh, it'll be fine. But sometimes when we've been burnt, when we haven't listened to our gut and we get burnt, like in the example that you gave, that stores in our body, that experience and the repercussions of not listening to our instincts stores in our body. And so when it happens again, those little chemicals that reside in our body now, they trigger. And they go, uh-oh, we know this. We know this experience. Remember we didn't listen last time? Here it is again. And interestingly, that's exactly how trauma works.
Say more about that.
Well, they say that memories and trauma, and by they I mean people who are researchers, say that trauma leaves a chemical residue in the body, and it needs to be processed in order for people not to be triggered again and again and again. So what happens, essentially, is that when people have trauma living in their bodies, and it is a chemical residue, when something happens that triggers that chemical, triggers that, whether it be adrenaline or whatever it is, the body doesn't know which trauma it is. It doesn't know what time it is, how much time has passed. All it knows is to be on guard, to experience that all over again. And I think intuition and trauma work fundamentally the same way. They operate in very similar ways.
Interesting. So are you saying then that it's learned? You have the ability to be intuitive.
Yes.
But you have to learn based on life experience.
I believe so. And the listening to the gut is one of the ways we process information. We process the information that's been left in our body. Mm. And like trauma, in order to disperse those chemicals so that we're not constantly triggered, we have to process them. It's a different process, but we have to go through it in order to release, if you will, the trauma. So that we're not constantly on guard when something similar happens.
Right. But I guess there's so much to unpack here. You know, in a business world or a client world, I can sometimes see things that are going to go wrong long before they go wrong. Mm-hmm. But some of that is just the experience.
Sure.
I've learned, because I've been through this before, that, oh, when A happens and B happens, watch out because C's coming down the road.
Right.
Whereas someone with less experience might not see all that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like my husband used to talk about refereeing. He could be refereeing a game and realize that there was going to be a big problem between the teams long before a less experienced referee could see it and would make calls to dissipate some of that tension or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about?
I think what I want to say is that intuition is not a replacement for experience. It's not a replacement for knowledge. What it is an augmentation of what we already know. In fact, I think there's some sort of equation that I read somewhere about, you know, well, I know wisdom is knowledge plus experience. I think wisdom is also knowledge plus experience plus intuition.
Mm.
So it's not an either or. These are all things that work together to make us wise. And I would say in our case, to make us crones. There's the crone word.
So let's unpack the whole notion of trauma.
Okay.
Why don't you start with that, Lisa? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, you rascal, you.
I know.
Rascal, you. Well, you know, one of the things I was thinking about as we talked last time was about, so how did I get to, I consider myself a very intuitive person. And how did I get that? How did I get there? And my partner in particular thinks I'm like crazy intuitive, like spooky intuitive. I don't know if that's true. But it started me thinking about what got me here, what honed that, what sharpened that ability. And I realized that a good chunk of it came from trauma. and hypervigilance. So I come from a very chaotic family of origin home. My mother was very mentally ill, although undiagnosed, but you know, you don't behave in the way she did without being, having some marbles missing. And I remember that I could walk into the house from school and I could almost smell that things were going to be bad, that she was going to be off, that she was going to be on a tirade. I don't know that it was a smell, but I could tell without even having closed the door what I was in for. So my senses became so attuned that to this day, I can walk into a room, a party, anything, and I know that if someone's been in a fight, if someone's feeling sad, if someone's angry, I can tell.
Wow.
And sometimes I'll ask a person about that, and sometimes I won't.
You've done that to me.
I have done that to you. Mm-hmm. I've done that to a couple of friends. And, you know, the result is usually like looking at me like, how did you know that?
Mm.
But it's, I would rather have received that skill in another way, I have to tell you. But I'm glad I have it, because it's a way that I can prepare myself for what might be coming. And that's a, in some ways, it's a danger response, right? That's the trauma piece.
And that's what's so hard on your body.
That's what's so hard on my body. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And hard on my emotions. But, you know, as I, you know, work with professionals, work with therapists, one of the things I'm learning is that I can disconnect that ability from danger by processing the trauma that goes along with it.
Mm.
So I can end up with the ability without thinking, I'm in danger. There's something bad going to happen. Which is, I think would be super handy actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know I talked with someone who came out of a difficult marriage who said, they were always sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop. That was the expression, always waiting for the other shoe to drop, because they'd been in a marriage where the other partner would kind of fly off the handle, or there would be rage, and they found themselves holding themselves sort of waiting for that to happen after that marriage was over.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to work through that.
Absolutely.
To let their shoulders down and realize that that was not everyday life for them anymore.
Well, and I think, and this is just a guess on my part, but I think that a hypervigilance is necessarily born out of trauma. So in the example you just gave, you know, someone's unpredictable. They get dysregulated, you know, in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates that creates hypervigilance on the person who's on the receiving end of that. And it is traumatic. And so when I was talking earlier about that chemical residue, your friend goes into her future life post, you know, this husband, but her body doesn't have a clock, a calendar, it doesn't know that. All it is those chemicals reside in the body now. And the only way to disperse them is through therapy, talking, cognitive behavioral work, those kinds of things that help address trauma, or else she's constantly triggered when she thinks, uh-oh, somebody's going to get mad, somebody's going to, you know, lash out. But it can end up being a useful skill if we disengage it from the trauma whence it comes.
I have to tell you something.
Tell me.
It was a man.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I made an assumption, didn't I? Yeah. Shame on me.
Well, we do these things, right?
We do.
Yeah. It was a man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, same process.
Yes, absolutely.
Same process, same kind of chemical reaction, same kind of work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was interesting that I assumed it was a woman.
We do that though, don't we?
We sure do.
Yeah.
I'm living proof, obviously.
So I missed my mind. My mind was screaming, do I tell her on a podcast? Do I
tell her on a podcast? Yes, you do, because that's wonderful. That's a wonderful thing to realize.
Yeah, it's not. That's why I don't like some of the words around, like domestic violence is fine, but there's sometimes an assumption that it's only ever directed toward a woman, and by far and away, that is the largest group, that men are the abusers, but not always.
Well, and you know, in the example of my mother, I mean, I should know this. My mother was abusive to an incredible degree to my father, who was an extremely passive person.
Mm.
And she was horrific to him and to us as kids too.
Mm-hmm.
But she was the perpetrator in our home. She was.
Wow, that's something. Okay, so we're talking. We're going to pick that up some other day, I think. I think okay. we will talk about that. But I want to go back to this whole thing of honing one's intuition and how you believe that trauma in your young life really caused you to hone that very quickly as as self-preservation.
For sure.
You needed to come home from school and open that door and know what you were walking into.
That's right. So I knew what to do or not to do.
Got it.
Yeah.
So would you just leave, or would you just... You would manage it some other way?
Oh, I would manage it sometimes I would just go straight to my room, close the door. Sometimes I would try and make her laugh. So it's kind of where I honed my sense of humor too.
Oh my.
I would try to make lighter the atmosphere by making her laugh, by, you know, trying to be around her. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But I got very good at being funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't connect that that's where you became funny. I just thought you have this natural ability, this talent to make everyone laugh.
Well, again, maybe I did. I mean, my mother was very funny in her way. My father was very funny in his way. But it certainly became a strategy. And I've used that strategy to decompress situations, to de-escalate situations many times in my professional life, in my personal life. You know, it's an effective strategy. And years and years and years ago, when dinosaurs still roamed the earth, I think I used that joke last time. Sorry, folks. I was a stand-up comic. And the one thing that made that doable for me, because it's really stressful, was I knew how to be funny in a very stressful environment.
Mm.
So the pressure and the feeling in my chest and the nervousness and all of that I felt going on stage, I knew those feelings. And I knew I could work through them. I knew that I could be funny despite.
Mm.
So yeah, I think, you know, I think trauma and, you know, difficult times with our parents is when we're young, there's much that the piper has to be paid for in terms of emotional work and even physical work. But I think also we end up with these, for better or for worse, these tools that we can use in a constructive way if we do the work to do that.
So is it, you know, people talk about silver linings or this notion of, you know, something good out of bad. Mm. Do you relate to that, that you honed these skills and made something good or became, you know, had became a comedian because of that?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this more connected to the notion that you had that gift and ability to do stand-up comedy anyway and you just develop that skill?
Oh, I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
I do. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, would I, if I had, you know, if I had three wishes with a genie, would I wish that none of that family stuff would have happened? My mother would have been a loving, nurturing, kind person. Would I rather have that than the skills I've developed? And I'm not sure that I would. Life is a series of trade-offs, as my friend Sandra often says.
Mm.
And I think that that was the trade, you know, living in that environment and experiencing the things I experienced. What I got as a result was these strategies, these skills. And I would be lying if I said they haven't helped me in my life.
I love a lot of those skills in you.
Well, thank you.
I do. So then it's such an odd thing to think about, if you hadn't had bad things happen to you, you may not have become the person that you are today.
Which is true. It's a cliche, but it's also very true. I mean, cliches are born in truth. The thing is I don't know who I would have become
mm-hmm.
if I'd been raised in a nurturing, loving, safe home. So I'll never know that.
Yeah.
And would I be stronger in some areas? Would I have, fewer picadillos? Would I have, you know, things that I struggle with that I wouldn't have to struggle with, that sort of thing. So I'll never know. That's life.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am with the skills that I have.
And they're wonderful.
Well, I like them. And thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that.
Anything else you want to talk about around that development of intuition? For you, it was trauma early in life that you feel mm-hmm. really honed that. Is there something else that we want to talk about in that honing of our intuition?
Well, I think the piece that's often missing for people is the listening part, the actioning intuition. And I think we have to trust that our body is giving us information. And if nothing else, that signal to us that something's off here, something, I'm getting other information, at the very least should make us, okay, I'm going to pay attention to what happens next. I'm going to keep gathering. I'm not going to action it yet, but I'm going to keep gathering to see what happens next and use my intuition to gather real life, real time information and to make decisions on. So it may be just a place where we put ourselves, where we are standing outside the situation, looking in. And that's one of the things intuition gives us. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to rush into a decision, but I think it does mean at the very least that we have to stand in the ready. And that's probably the thing I'd say about that essential part of actioning, what our body's telling us.
So we talked a little bit about the difference between discernment and cynicism,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're talking about. It's using now the gift or skill of discernment to action what you are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You've been feeling something, mm-hmm. meeting someone or watching a situation unfold or something. So you want to develop or use your intuition. And when you are being intuitive, you are using a gift of discernment.
It's true. Yep.
We use the word winnowing, in a conversation off mic.
Mm-hmm.
You're winnowing. And that is such a good word for that. The thing I don't want to become is cynical in my old age.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, you know, what is the difference between discernment and cynicism, and where is the tipping point?
I think cynicism is thinking without a sense of agency. It's about not believing you have any opportunity to make change either in your own world or in the world at large. And so you become negative. It's a kind of giving up, I think, cynicism is. A kind of rolling over and, you know, everything's terrible and this is what people are really like and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's kind of an absence of love, too, where you see only the negative or you know, cast aspersions on people's motives or their abilities. And that's a lack of grace and charity and love, I think, essentially, when you boil it all down.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think the cynicism piece for me is also, you know, I think you use the word a lack of agency. I think that older women, and we, I think very early on we talked about how in a prior episode that older women are sometimes invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is connected to what may seem like cynicism, is because they have become invisible. They no longer have agency.
Yeah, they no longer have, let me say that differently. People no longer believe in their agency.
Okay.
Their agency, yes, doesn't matter to others.
Yeah.
What they think doesn't matter to others. They're relegated off to a corner, mm-hmm, you know.
Invisible.
Absolutely. Yep.
So crones are not invisible.
Absolutely not. No. Crones are matriarchs. They're the givers of and holders of knowledge and wisdom and experience.
What's our word?
What's our word for today? I think it might be grace.
Yeah, grace.
Grace.
Live it.
I love talking to you.
Likewise.
Well, everybody out there, hope you had a good episode, that you enjoyed our conversation, and we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye for now, everybody.
Cronecast is produced by Odvod Media, odvod.com. Original music by Darren Hagen. Our podcasts are based on lived experiences. We are not experts in psychology, philosophy, gerontology, or mathematics. It's just a conversation between friends. We podcast from Edmonton, Alberta on Treaty 6 territory. Find us at cronecast.ca.